Hogtown Rhapsody, Part 3. Utina suddenly found herself awake. She didn't climb slowly through the layers of somnolence to a reluctant wakefulness the way she usually did. On the other hand, neither did she jerk awake with a start, heart pounding, as after a bad dream. She was simply asleep one moment and wide awake the next. With a puzzled murmle, somewhere between a murmur and a burble, she reached to the nightstand for her watch and looked at its luminous dial. 3:30 a.m., almost on the dot. She got carefully out of bed, went to the bathroom, and got a drink of water. On her way back, she paused to look at the others. Dorothy was curled up in the other bed, looking even more perfectly composed than normal. In the moonlight coming through the half-open drapes, Utina could just make out the dark smudge of Caitlin's hair. Other than that, she was invisible, snuggled into her side of the covers. Utina smiled and went to the window, struck by a sudden desire to look at the moon. She couldn't see it very well from that angle, so she got her robe, put it on over her pajamas, and quietly went out onto the balcony. "Cha!" she remarked under her breath as she stepped out onto the cold concrete with her bare feet. She pulled the sliding door to behind her, went to the railing, and looked up at the gleaming face of the nearly full moon. It was really beautiful, white and gray with its craters and seas, much more interesting than Sephiro's rather plain silvery-blue satellite. She smiled. It wasn't really all that cold out tonight, and for some reason she felt like standing out here for a while, looking at the moon lording it over the towers of Toronto. She turned to see if she could see the moon's reflection in the mirrored face of the Carlisle Tower, and her heart nearly stopped. There was someone else on the balcony with her, a slim, white-clad, silver-haired, dark figure, who stood leaning against the railing at the other side of the balcony, his arms folded across his chest. As she turned to face him, he looked up, and the moonlight fell across his face. For one terrifying instant, Utina thought she recognized him. She drew back, sucking cold air between her gritted teeth, hand reaching for the handle of the door. In the next instant, she realized she did recognize him, but her notion of who he had been at first was wrong. "I'm sorry," he said softly. "I didn't mean to frighten you." She blinked at him.
What are you doing here?"
she asked, her own voice hushed in response. "I wanted to talk to you," he replied. "The conditions were right, so I thought I would try it." She stood and stared at him for a few moments. When she spoke again, her voice was a low whisper, almost inaudible.
"Who are you?"
He smiled and drew himself up from the railing to his full height. Gold buttons and a sky-blue gemstone glittered on his jacket. In the dim silver light, the scarlet lining of his short cape was almost black, but his green eyes and wavy argent hair nearly glowed. He swept himself into a deep and courtly bow, then straightened. "I apologize," he said. "All these times we've encountered each other, and I've never given you my name. It's Dios. Or at least it was, before I died."
"Dios," said Utina softly. "Course."
Said Dios with gentle sardony. "Dios, comma, sword of. Dios, comma, power of. It does get a bit redundant after a while."
How did you get here?"
"I've always been here," Dios replied. "You brought me with you." He smiled. "I must apologize again. Toward the end, I lost hope and assumed that you would fail. Forgive me." The wry edge came back to his smile as he continued, "By then, I'd become a trifle pessimistic." Utina blinked at him again, and as she did so, realized that she could see the railing behind him. He was ever so slightly transparent.
"You're a ghost?"
"More or less," Dios said, flipping a hand. "You see, I died some time ago. Well, you've heard the story. I suppose you thought it was a metaphor for something?"
"No. It's the literal truth.
I'm dead. The tournament you fought was for the right to inherit my spirit, with all that that entails. The sword, the power, revolutionize the world, all that. And, well, you did it. So now you carry me within you." Utina shook her head. "Why me?" "That's a complex question to ask a ghost," Dios replied. "Basically, it's because you're the right person for the job. I wasn't sure it would work,
After all, you're not really built on the usual prince planform, are you? But it all worked out in the end. Well, almost. He sighed. I wish I hadn't lived when I died. Utena gave him a puzzled look. What the hell is that supposed to mean? Oh, the other me, Dios said, looking irritated. Not at her, but in general. The walking dead man. I died, and my body kept going without me. And it appears that without me, my body is a complete bastard. Let me tell you, that's an unpleasant revelation. If you can at all avoid learning such things about yourself, do. You're different, said Utena. You didn't used to have a sense of humor, especially one this weird. The circumstances were rather different, and I'm starting to take on aspects of your personality, Dios replied. After all, I am part of you now. The only reason I still retain some semblance of my old identity is because our fusion was interrupted. She looked skeptical. So I'm Schizo, standing out on the balcony talking to my other personality. Sort of, Dios replied. If it helps, you could think of yourself as possessed instead. Oh, that's a big improvement. At least I'm a benevolent ghost, said Dios, shrugging. I don't throw things around the room or make you do embarrassing things. Utena laughed. I can't believe this, she said. I've cracked. On vacation. Why didn't you show up last week? You were busy last week. If you don't do well in your studies, how are we ever to complete our cycle of destiny? I didn't want to distract you. He gestured vaguely toward her. Your Aunt Belle's gift is the only reason I can speak to you this way at all. Utena glanced at the rose signet on her right ring finger. The seal? She mused. Dios nodded. It keeps my energies on a level where you can comprehend them. As time goes on, you'll need it less. You'll become more and more adept at calling on me, and I'll become more and more like you, until one day there's no distinction to be made any longer. I will be Utena. You will be Dios. We will be one. He smiled. I'm looking forward to it. I've been much too busy since my death. Call me a traditionalist, but I think when a man dies, he ought to take it easy. Utena gave him a rather weak smile. Uh-huh, she said. There is one thing I hope I'm still here to see, of course. I'd like to see Anthea again one last time. I'd like to see her smile. As he said it, he smiled himself, and his resemblance to his sister suddenly struck her. And, he added with a twinkle in one emerald eye, if I see her through your eyes, then smiling she almost certainly will be. You think so, huh? Said Utena, her own smile getting a bit stronger. Dios leaned back against the rail again, folding his arms, and nodded, still smiling. I know it. Utena looked down at the seal again, then at the tiny scar on her other ring finger. She has my ring, she said, the one you gave me. Indeed she does, and I'm sure treasures it, just as you did. I wish I had something of hers, Utena went on. You do, said Dios. What? Utena asked him. You have me. The fact that I'm bound to you is the ultimate proof of my sister's worth to you. What other keepsake do you need in the face of that? You're her prince, after all. And you'll do a better job of it than I did, irregularities notwithstanding. A scudding cloud crossed the face of the moon, and as it did so, Dios dimmed, becoming almost completely transparent. Wait! Said Utena, reaching for him. You can't go now. I have so much I need to ask you. Conditions, Dios replied, his voice faint as if he were at the other end of a tunnel. The cloud passed, and with the return of the moonlight, he returned as well. Shaking his head sadly, he went on, The workings of magic always have conditions. It's pesky, but unavoidable. Don't worry, you'll see me again. He gave her a wry grin. Who else have I got to talk to? He levered himself away from the rail again and glanced up at the moon. Utena looked with him, and they both saw a larger cloud sliding toward the silvery disk. For now, though, it looks like this is good night, said Dios. He bowed to her again. Braveheart, Utena, he said, smiling. I am always with you. I am you. She smiled, feeling a tear escape her eye, and took a step toward him. He took her in his arms, and she could feel him, the strength and warmth of him, smell the scent of roses, just as if he were really there, just as it had been when she was a child. I'll see you again soon, Dios murmured. His lips brushed her cheek, kissing away the single tear. Then the cloud crossed the moon, and he was gone. Utina suddenly found herself awake. She didn't climb slowly through the layers of somnolence to a reluctant wakefulness the way she usually did. On the other hand, neither did she jerk awake with a start, heart pounding, as after a bad dream. She was simply asleep one moment and wide awake the next. She sat up and looked around the room, wide-eyed and confused. Caitlin was still asleep beside her, all but invisible in the covers. Dorothy faced the other way now, lying eerily still. The slash of moonlight across the floor was at a slightly different angle. Her robe was still hanging on the back of the chair. She picked up her watch and looked at it. 3:48 a.m. Did that really happen? Or was it just the weirdest in a series of weird dreams? Her feet were cold. Dios? She said softly. Said Caitlin, with the sublime indifference of the fully unconscious. Dorothy evinced no reaction at all. Utina looked at her seal, then she shook her head, burrowed down into the covers next to Kate, and went back to sleep. In the morning, she told Kate about her dream, if it had been a dream. Kate pondered it while she brushed her teeth and showered, but came to no useful conclusions by the time that was done. She emerged mostly dressed but shirtless, brushed her hair, then donned one of the shirts she'd bought at the science center, a black one decorated with a nice color rendition of the periodic table of the elements, all the while still thinking. Then she turned to Utina, who sat cross-legged on the end of the bed watching TV, and said, "No idea." Utina laughed and tossed her the remote control. "I figured," she said. "I don't either. I guess I'll just wait and see if he comes back." Something like that happened to Dad once, Kate mused while Utina brushed her teeth. "Really?" asked Utina after spitting out a mouthful of foam. "How'd that happen?"
I don't know exactly, Kate replied. It happened before I was born. He was sort of semi-possessed by the spirit of a 20th century adventurer named Kent Allard.
Weird, said Utina. She paused briefly to gargle, spat again, and asked, "So what happened?"
"Aunt Bell and her sisters separated him during the Ragnarok," said Kate. "Allard's in Valhalla now."
"Huh. Well, I don't want that to happen," Utina mused, "and I don't think it'd be Dios's first choice either." Kate agreed, nodding. She went to sprawl out on the bed and surf channels while Utina showered, still pondering. "What's on the menu for today?" asked Utina as she emerged, scrubbing at her hair with one of the fat, fluffy hotel towels.
"Queen Street," Kate replied, switching off the TV. "Bookstores, cafes, clothes." She shrugged. "Whatever takes our fancy."
She grinned at Dorothy, who sat on the couch reading the book she'd bought at the Science Center. "If we're going clubbing, we'll need appropriate clothes." Dorothy marked her place, put the book down, and favored this notion with a little smile and an "indeed." Queen Street was everything Caitlin had billed it as, and more. For most of the day, they went from one little shop to another, browsing through entire bookstores devoted to single genres. Mystery, science fiction, history, alien language poetry, the occult, second-hand clotheries, oddball jewelry stores, music stores, used record shops. While Utina and Sionji prowled the racks at Galactic Core Second-Hand Records, we accrete the best debris, the others spent an entertaining hour or so in one of the used clothes stores. When they emerged, Caitlin was still giggling, Dorothy looked mildly amused, and Mickey looked faintly embarrassed.
You'll see, was all the explanation Kate would give to Utina's puzzled expression.
Nightfall came, and, tired and happy from their day's foraging, the group returned to the Imperial to rest before the big-ticket event on the evening's agenda. "What do you wear to a symphony concert?" Utina wondered as she surveyed the rather slim selection of clothes in her suitcase. "I wish you'd told me ahead of time we were going to this."
I did, but you weren't paying attention. I don't suppose you own a nice dress.
Utina gave her a look.
Didn't think so. You could get the concierge to rent you a tux. That'd get you a weird look, but it'd brighten his day, I'm sure. Humph, said Utena. Don't tempt me. I think a tuxedo would become you, said Dorothy. You have a way of making men's fashions look as if men are simply dressing in imitation of you. Kate gave Dorothy an impressed look. That's good, she said. I like that. She took her garment bag out of the closet and hung it on the inside of the bathroom door, then leaned back out and said, If you don't want to do that, your old uniform jacket looks nice and formal with your winter pants. Especially with the bits for dueling. I can't exactly get those whenever I want, Utena said. Can't you? Asked Kate with a smile. Then she went into the bathroom and shut the door behind her. Utena regarded the closed door for a moment, looked at her seal, then turned to Dorothy and said, You know, she might have a point. If you say so, said Dorothy, who had no idea what Utena and Kate had been talking about. Thoughtfully, Utena dressed as Kate had suggested, in the black jacket of her old Otori Academy uniform and the charcoal pants of her winterweight WPI uniform. Then she stood in front of the mirrored closet doors, regarded herself, and concentrated. For a moment nothing happened, and she just felt stupid. But just as she was about to give up, she felt something stir deep inside her. It felt a bit like she'd felt on the way up to the dueling platform for one of her dates with Destiny, and a bit like the sorceress working that surrounded her when her blood activated the rune sword Corwin Ravenhair had forged for her. A spark, a warmth, a peculiar but not unpleasant glowing feeling. Somewhere down in the core of her being, in the back of and a bit below her heart. A bit of poetry in an alien tongue flickered through her mind. She wondered at its meaning, and in that moment she was transformed. With a shimmering sound and a cascade of golden sparks, her uniform changed, acquiring the cuffs, epaulettes, petticoat, and chain of a duelist of the rose. Dorothy cocked an eyebrow. Remarkable, she said. Utena turned to her, grinning. Well, I'll be damned, she said. Never did that on purpose before. I always thought it was something Himemi was doing. She regarded the seal again for a moment, kissed it, and then twirled around in front of the mirror, admiring herself. Not half bad. A little odd, but not half bad. The epaulettes and chain really gave the old Otori black that little something extra. Dorothy changed from her street clothes into the somber black dress she'd been wearing the first time Utena had ever seen her. With her black stockings and the white ruffle on the front, it made her look a bit like a maid, but Utena tactfully kept that opinion to herself and went to answer the knock at the door. How are... Kyoichi Sayonji began, and then he and Utena caught sight of each other and simultaneously took half steps back, saying together, Whoa! Look at you, said Utena, who recovered first. Captain Formal. And Miki, too, my goodness. You look like groomsmen at somebody's wedding. And so they did, for both men were wearing black tuxedos, complete with white tab-collar shirts, pearl-gray waistcoats, mirror-shined shoes, and swallow-tailed notch-front jackets. Sayonji's wavy hair was brushed almost glossy, and Miki had taken extra care combing his usually disorderly Ringo Starr cut into something resembling a part. They wore roses in their jacket pockets, Sayonji's green, Miki's blue. Where'd you find the roses? The hotel has a florist, said Miki. He handed her a white one. I thought you might need this. Utena smiled and tucked it into her top pocket. Last time you gave me a flower, it ruined my whole day, she said. Not this time, Miki replied. Promise. He looked around. Where's Caitlin? Still getting ready, said Utena with a sardonic grin. Typical female. I hear you, Kate's voice sounded warningly through the bathroom door. I like your dress, Miss Dorothy, said Miki as he handed her a yellow rose. Thank you, Dorothy replied. And was it Utena's imagination, or did the compliment, or possibly the flower, raise just a hint of color in her cheeks? I think it makes her look like a maid, Sayonji murmured, and Utena stepped on his foot. Ow! Watch the shoes, they're rented. Try to have a little tact, Utena grumbled. I didn't say it looked bad, Sayonji replied. The bathroom door opened, and the four turned to face it, various comments coming to their lips, only to die there. At her first sight of Caitlin, pretty but nondescript in a too-big school sweatshirt and gray jeans, Utena had speculated that the brown-haired girl could probably, with a bit of effort, turn herself into a bit of a head-turner, Now it was plain to see that she had been correct. Kate had made herself up just the slightest bit, adding a hint of color to her cheeks, eyelids, and lips. Her brown hair was drawn back and up a little into a simple but effective ponytail, and she wore silver earrings in the shape of teardrops. She was dressed in a floor-length sheath dress, made of what looked to be black silk, slit up the right side almost to her hip and trimmed in orange, and a close-fitting jacket in the same colors over it. The jacket had short-sleeved and three golden Chinese-style looped buttons held it together in front. Roll-cuffed black silk gloves, so thin she could still wear her duelist's ring over them, and low shoes completed the picture.
"Wow," said Utina. "Where did you get that dress?"
"Aunt Belle made it," Kate replied, a little more color coming to her cheeks as she noted the expressions on the faces of Sionji and Miki as they witnessed her transformation. "It's for this spring concert."
"My goodness," Sionji observed.
"Perhaps I should reconsider not having declared suit." Kate gave him a mock glare.
"Don't you start," she said warningly.
You do look quite, here," said Miki, and he handed her an orange rose.
"Thank you, Miki," she said.
"Well, lucky color," she added, and tucked it carefully into her hair above her left ear.
"I have to have a picture of this," said Utena.
"I've taken care of that already," said Dorothy.
Shall we?"
Kate asked as she took her black school cloak from the coat rack and draped it around her shoulders, then collected her walking stick from the corner. The Toronto Symphony Orchestra, under the direction of Cassandra Moriarty, put on a fine program of Russian music that night, with selections by Tchaikovsky, Prokofiev, Shostakovich, Sverdlovsky, and Trojikin. One of Shostakovich's folk dances got jammed inextricably in the gearing within Utina's head and would not come out, leaving her with no choice but to hum it over and over again all the way back to the hotel. This would have annoyed her companions, except that they'd all enjoyed that bit too, and didn't mind hearing it repeated. Caitlin did have to threaten her with injury if she kept humming it while they were trying to sleep, though. Wednesday was occupied entirely by a visit to the Royal Ontario Museum, which is a remarkable and fascinating place, but doesn't translate well to third-hand description.